Hello, and welcome to another edition of the podcast that attempts to blend interesting facts with stupid jokes and despair to make what can only be described as a truly upsetting smoothie.
It's very tart. It's very tart.
And we call that smoothie Don't Let's Chart. Ben Baker.
And I'm not involved in that smoothie, Phil Catterall. I'm not having no part of it.
Soak it up.
Never.
Soak up the history. This is Don't Let's Chart, building the roof of fun over the barnyard of history.
What are you doing? Why do you do this?
To encapsulate there might be a new listener out there.
It's an illness. You have an illness.
And I'm trying to encapsulate what we do. It's fun. It's fun and laughter with a factual element.
Right.
And we start, as ever, with 5 days celebrated around the world on this, the 18th of May.
Okay.
And at five, it's the Christian feast day of Eric the Ninth of Sweden. But this is another one who was killed.
Yeah.
Obviously,
yeah.
They tend to mainly be people who've been killed. He was killed by a rival. When being informed of the approach of the enemy, he went to a nice mass, then went out to meet the troops of his enemy and was pulled off his horse,
yes,
onto the ground. Well, it's the line. It went on a different line.
Yeah.
By the swarming rebels who taunted and stabbed him and then beheaded him. Would not recommend. 7 out of 10.
3 stars, no funny bits.
At 4 is International Museum Day.
Huh.
And they've reopened now.
Yeah, yesterday.
By the time everyone hears this, they've reopened. What's your favourite museum, Phil?
Oh, I quite like the Science Museum in London. I'm a big fan of that.
That is
one.
A good one. Mine is, of course, Muscle Museum by Muse.
Very good.
No, I did. Science, well, it used to be, when I were a lad, the Museum of Television, Photography, Rums, Bums and Mouth Organs, whatever it was. But now it's the Bradford Science and Media Museum.
Okay.
It's great. It's weird. It's one of the things that's actually really useful quite near me.
Yeah.
There's very few of those. Very few.
Well, we try and keep it away from the north as a rule.
Yeah, it's a bit like, what's the word? Defibrillators, in that respect.
I mean, we're just keeping those away from you because of that incident.
Yeah, there was a lot of soilage. Number 3, it's World AIDS Vaccine Day.
Oh, is that a thing?
Yeah, it is. And I just put that in because, one, that's, you know, it's good that it's a thing. And two, vaccines are great, aren't they?
Yeah.
Since we last spoke, I am half full.
I am half full, and by the time this goes out, I will be 100% vaccine.
Up to Mecca's name.
Yep.
With vaccine.
So hang on, what did you say, World
AIDS Vaccine Day?
Right, but is there one of those yet?
No, we basically, there was this big speech that Clinton did,
mm-hmm,
in 1997, I think, and the year after they did it, but, you know, basically saying how urgent we need a vaccine for this.
Yeah.
Number 2 is National Visit Your Relatives Day.
You're all right.
No sauce for this one. But the website I found it on says, take the relative scavenger hunt challenge and see if you can complete it whilst talking to your family members. The more you visit, the better chance you'll have of completing it.
Hooray!
Also, use hashtag National Visit Your Relatives Day to post on social media. Fuck off!
Thanks. Hashtag national stop setting me hashtags to use day.
Hashtag fuck off day.
I mean, it's lower effort, but fair play.
Well, speaking of low effort, at number 1, National No Dirty Dishes Day. Basically, it says you should just have takeout instead so no one has to wash up. But it's also National Cheese Souffle Day. And I imagine the two do not go hand in hand. Can't really order a cheese souffle, can you?
I mean, you can, but it'll probably be fairly deflated by the time it gets there.
I mean, it's no worse than some of the stuff I've had off Just Eat. So. Right, on to some events that happened on 18th of May throughout history. And we start at 1756 with Great Britain declaring war on France as part of the Seven Years' War. No, very interesting. No one's heard about that, so I'll move on to 1803. Britain declares war on France after Napoleon continues interfering with Italy and Switzerland. So, yeah, two just happens, 2 days, two France declarations.
Fair, fair. Yeah. I mean, they were nearby. That's why we kept declaring war on them mostly.
1897, and a public reading of Bram Stoker's new novel, Dracula or the Undead, was performed in London.
Ooh.
Are you a fan of Dracula or The Undead, as nobody calls it?
I mean, the original book is still fairly spooky, I would say. There's some very, very creepy bits in it. The relatively recent Stephen Moffat and Mark Gatiss adaptation was not so good.
It had
some good bits. Dracula as a concept is creepy, yes. There are some terrible ones, though.
We've got a list, Phil.
Yeah.
Cool.
Gizmodo did the 12 worst Draculas of all time. And a bit that I quite like is that they've excluded any place where he's not identified by name, and they've also excluded any parodies because, and I quote, yelling at Dracula dead and loving it for being a bad Dracula is dumb, which is correct. It is correct.
So you've got a list of the top 12 worst Draculas of all time. And we start at 12.
At 12. Okay, so NBC did a 10-episode Dracula series with Jonathan Rhys-Meyers.
Oh, that's dimly familiar.
So Dracula was the hero in it. He was posing as an American industrialist trying to invent wireless light bulbs and buying coolant companies.
thanks. Number 11.
Number 11, Blood of Dracula's Castle.
Oh, that sounds good.
Which is a name. So apparently in this one, Count Dracula and his wife are squatting in a castle in Arizona. You know, all those castles in Arizona.
And he means squatting in the illegal residential thing, not, you know, taking a dump.
Correct. And then the owner comes back of the castle and Dracula tries to get him to sell it. Mm. Also, the original owner is either a serial killer or a werewolf.
I mean, why can't there be both? I'm equal opportunities.
I kind of want to see this film. Kind of want to see it.
Good name.
1969, it's from John Carradine as the butler.
Sadly, we don't have a list of worst Dracula's butlers.
No, we don't. Always Eagle.
I'll get it. Well, apparently the latest incarnation did not go according to plan. You've seen that documentary. Number 10.
Number 10, Vampirella. So can you remember who is playing Dracula?
No.
It's Roger Daltrey.
Oh.
Yeah.
So, you know, there's your through line, Vampirella to Buddy song.
I mean, it's 1996 as well, so it's not like a young Roger Daltrey. It's
right, because I was thinking, like, because is it based on a comic?
Yeah.
Yeah, so the Vampirella, the image is quite striking.
Yeah.
I genuinely didn't know there was a film.
Music by Joel Goldsmith, not Jerry Goldsmith, Joel Goldsmith.
Get me Jay Goldsmith! Okay. So number 9.
Number 9, Dario Argento's Dracula. 3D.
I mean, I was already sold with the first bit, but add 3D and I've lost all interest. Tell me, was this about 82, 83 by any chance?
No, 2012.
Oh, the second wave of 3D, right? Yeah.
It stars Thomas Kreitschmann as Dracula, who you will remember from, let me see, Resident Evil Apocalypse. We all remember him from that. Rutger Hauer as Abraham Van Helsing.
Good. Do you know that? I can see that in my head.
Yeah, that makes sense. So the reason that this one is bad, he becomes a giant praying mantis monster at some point, and it's still not the dumbest thing he does in the film.
Wow. Wow. That's oddly beautiful.
It's kind of.
You know, if you're going to go somewhere, you might as well go big.
Indeed.
And then go home.
Mostly just go home.
Yeah, but go home, Dracula. Go home. Is that on the list at number 8?
No, at number 8, we have Billy the Kid versus Dracula. So yeah, Dracula becomes a ranch owner, gets outsmarted by a dog, apparently. So apparently in the climactic finale, Billy shoots him, which has no effect, and then throws his gun at him, which knocks him out so he can then stake him.
Number 7.
Number 7, Dracula, Prince of Darkness. So this is a Christopher Lee one. This is the one where he has no lines. He just hisses. Why have you cast Christopher Lee if you don't want him to say anything?
Yeah, it's not like he's got a familiar voice or any special timbre about him. It's just like, I'm exactly here. Do you want some sucking on or what? That's what he sounded like. Obviously, we all know that.
So, according to Wikipedia, this could be for one of two reasons. Christopher Lee says that the script was rubbish, so he didn't speak. However, the screenwriter said he didn't write him any dialogue because vampires don't chat.
I mean, there's chat and there's basic, common decency. Hello, how are you? Kind of sucking blood out of your neck, etc. How's your dad? it's basics. Oh, dear. Number six.
This is a very early 2000s one. Van Helsing.
Oh, God, yeah.
Yeah, Richard Roxburgh as Dracula in that one.
The Australian.
That's the one from...
Moulin Rouge.
That's the one. Apparently in this one, he's very interested in being a father.
Father.
That's his main thing.
Number five,
Dracula's dog. So Dracula's dog. Dracula's very not in it very much. It's a 1977 film. Dracula shows up and bites a dog. And
I mean, don't bite dogs.
Agreed.
It's not good for either of you. Have you seen Cujo? It don't work out well.
So apparently, what happens is that the dog stops him from biting a peasant woman, and Dracula was so annoyed that he turned the dog into a vampire. This isn't a comedy.
No, of course not. Of course not. Is it called Dracula's Dog?
It's called, in the UK it was called Zoltan, Hound of Dracula.
I love it. and the year is Bonios. Number four.
Number four, Buffy the Vampire Slayer.
The film? Oh, no, it's in Buffy versus Dracula, isn't it? Start of season five?
Whichever season it is where Dawn first shows up, I believe.
I recall, that was built up quite a lot. The Ultimate Showdown.
And it was just very stupid.
it's daft.
And that first episode was 2000. So, I think I was still in my student house at that point. And I hadn't watched much Buffy, but one of my housemates was an obsessive. So it was Buffy versus Dracula. So we thought, this will be fun. We'll watch this. And at the end, the final scene of the episode, from what I remember, is that they go home and Dawn is there and they just act like she's always been there. To me, it meant nothing whatsoever. But my housemate was like, who's that? I was like, I don't know. It's your show, mate. What are you doing? I'm just here for Sarah Michelle Gellar. I don't know what's going on.
That's disgusting. Don't be so crass. It was obviously Alison Hannigan. Number three.
Number three, Dracula 2000.
Oh, yes. Again, another one I remember seeing in a video shop.
It was released December the 22nd, 2000, so it just barely made it in.
Oh, okay.
What I like is like Dracula 2000, also known internationally as Dracula 2001. Gerard Butler is your Count Dracula, who in this they also say was Judas Iscariot. So,
an important distinction to make.
Yeah. So apparently, God punished Judas Iscariot with vampire powers for betraying Jesus.
So why not?
Yeah.
So why not?
Omar Epps is in it as well.
Oh, good. The Taub versus is stretching. Okay, number two.
Number two is Dracula versus Frankenstein.
I don't see how any film with that premise could possibly not live up to it.
So apparently, it doesn't really feature them fighting. It began as a generic horror movie starring neither of them, but then it fell apart before it was finished. The director decided to add Frankenstein to the footage. Then that fell apart. The director decided to add Dracula as well by casting a former stockbroker as the king of the vampires because he looked right. He does not. He does not. So this Dracula wants to bring Frankenstein back to life for reasons unknown. And as soon as Frank wakes up, he attacks and Dracula is forced to kill him and doesn't pay attention to the time and the sun comes up and he dies. I
believe the phrase is tacked on.
I need to see this. I need to see this film. The fact that it's just a mess of so Lon Chaney Jr. is in it.
Oh no! It's definitely not up there with Kramer versus Kramer.
No.
Ah, number one, the worst Dracula of all time is
Blade Trinity Dracula, which it's not a good film. It's Blade Trinity.
It's not. It's really not.
Wesley Snipes can't be arsed, which doesn't help. Other people are putting some more effort in, but yeah, Dracula in this is played by Dominic Purcell, and he goes by the name Drake rather than Dracula. Yeah,
it's clever. Oh, and Triple H is in it, isn't it?
And Patton Oswalt.
Oh yeah. Flipping hell, actually, when I think about it, it's quite a good cast.
Cast-wise, yeah. It's got Callum Keith Rennie, who you will remember as not Ray Vecchio.
That's correct.
So, yeah, bad.
Do you know who would have made an even worse Dracula?
Is it you?
I mean, no, I'd be excellent at it. I'd be brilliant. I've got my own straw and everything. Not all the paper bloody things that fall apart when you try and have a milkshake. No, of course, it's Pope John Paul II.
Well, I don't know. He could have hidden it quite well.
I don't think there's any history of hiding things in the Catholic Church or covering up any.
Moving on. Yeah. Actually, no, he wouldn't have been able to because there's all those fucking crosses everywhere. Would have been in trouble all the time.
Yeah, yeah, no, that is true. He was born, of course, this day, 1920. Carol to his pals. And he was our childhood pope, really, wasn't he?
He was.
Off the spitting image.
In a very real way, Ben, he was our pope, wasn't he?
And you know what he doesn't have?
What?
Don't have an handprint outside Grauman's Chinese Theatre, which opened on this day in Hollywood, California in 1927.
Yeah.
And so I'm going to do the list, top 10 things off of the Pink Panther show titles. Because that's obviously where that Panthermobile thing came.
No, absolutely.
No, of course, it's where all the famous people put the handprint in cement and it stays. And there are some strange names that have been given the opportunity. Some they'd probably like to forget about. And a few people who did things differently. Obviously, Mel Brooks is quite a famous one.
Right.
As he put his hands in the cement and he had an extra comedy finger.
Yes, yes, he did.
Attached. Whilst Groucho Marx made an imprint of his cigar. Whoopi Goldberg added a dreadlock. You had Betty Grable's legs. And Marilyn Monroe's... Correct, earring.
Thanks.
Western stars, William S. Hart, not to be confused with William Shart, which is one of those speciality acts, and Roy Rogers. Again, just a name, not a statement. Left imprints of their guns. Herbie the Love Bug left imprints of his tyres.
Right.
Yep. And best of all, the hoof prints of Gene Autry's horse, Champion, Roy Rogers' horse, Trigger, and Tom Mix's horse, Tony.
Okay.
Do you know the last people who actually did it before the pandemic started? Oh, it was Kevin Hart was the last one, December 2019. But just before them, Kevin Smith and Jason Mewes.
Okay. Yeah. I mean, I guess.
Yeah. I mean, it's better that than the ones from the year before, which included Pitbull. You know, Pitbull.
Pitbull of shouting over other people's music fame.
Yeah, Pitbull.
What?
Yeah.
Why?
I mean, he was only following a legacy because Kiss did it in 1976.
No.
And your favourite musical act, Alvin and the Chipmunks, did it in 2011.
Oh, garbage.
As also did the Smurfs. Again, I'm not sure how this happened because spoilers, they're not real. Darth Vader did it in August 1977.
Right.
Donald Duck did it with Clarence Nash.
Hang on, Darth Vader, you say?
Yes, Darth Vader, the man Darth Vader.
Was it Dave Darth Vader Prowse or was it James Earl Jones?
I don't know, he had a mask on. I mean, he was just some bloke, wasn't he?
Yeah.
But ah, look, Darth Vader's doing it. Great. Watch Star Wars. Donald Duck did it. And Optimus Prime in 2014.
Wow.
Apparently he didn't put his handprints in because, you know, he doesn't have hands. But yeah.
No, no.
Tie in with one of the Transformers films, the
Age of Extinction, which is, and this is true, rubbish.
Wait, let me put on my shocked voice. Really?
Age of Extinction is, I believe, the first one that had Mark Wahlberg in and has one character who has a laminated card in his wallet to explain the state's Romeo and Juliet laws, which, as a joke, it's not a good one. It's not a good one.
No. Moving on, very swiftly. That is 65. Have you heard of a program called The Stars Trek?
Vaguely.
Yeah, well, apparently it's been on. And it was on this date that a list of names Gene Roddenberry put together for the captain in this new Star Trek was about 16 names that included Kirk.
That sounds familiar.
It does. Are the other names out there? Do you know?
I couldn't find all of them. So the most common ones that are known are Captain Robert April and Christopher Pike, because they have both then shown up as characters. I think Robert April was in the animated series,
right,
and Christopher Pike was in the pilot.
Yes.
And then more recently in Discovery, he was played by Anson Mount, who really needed a good gig after Inhumans. So I'm glad that he got that and became everyone's favourite space dad. He considered names like Hannibal, Timber, Boone, Flag, and Rain Tree. And to the best of my knowledge, those haven't shown up in any sort of major capacity.
Correctly. But you know, but is very much equal to Star Trek.
What?
In televisual terms.
Go on.
And that is, of course, the 1972 American TV sitcom, Me and the Chimp. Which, there's certain sites to look at, you know, for information, things that happened on this day. And he said, the last episode of Me and the Chimp aired on this day on CBS in the US. And I'm like, brilliant, I'll do a quiz on that. Is this a real episode of Me and the Chimp or not? And then I looked at the actual episode descriptions and I'm like, no quiz needed.
What is the basic premise of Me and the Chimp before we get into this?
Basically, it's a guy with a family. The girl brings a chimp home and it just lives with them. And that's it.
So it's like Alf if Alf was a chimp.
Yeah.
Okay.
Let's be honest, Alf sort of is a chimp.
Yeah. But he's a talking...
He's a talking cat eating chimp. Yeah, certainly.
Pig thing, yeah.
Not that I'm suggesting that the chimp didn't. I'm saying the chimp. He's called Buttons.
Guess what? It's Buttons' birthday. You didn't let him guess.
Buttons' birthday?
He's been with us exactly 1 month. A month in a chimp's age is a whole year in a person's age.
It certainly is. Now, about my newspaper.
We're trying to teach Buttons to read.
He did this?
He made him do it, Daddy. We're sorry.
Okay, honey, okay, there's no real harm. But all I really need is just one page so I can check my stocks.
Did it have a lot of numbers on it?
Yes.
Buttons ate it.
Why did you eat my newspaper? Do I ever try to read your bananas?
So episodes include My Pet the Thief.
Right.
The effort of Mike to train Buttons to ring a bell when a stranger enters the house backfires when a burglar offers the chimp candy. No other information provided.
Okay.
Mike the matchmaker, Buttons meets a female chimp named Mildred that he's attracted to. But when Mike attempts to discuss the situation with the other chimp's owner, he's distracted by the chimp's babysitter, a beautiful Swedish blonde.
Sure.
I feel that wasn't as much about the chimp, I'll be honest with you. Mike's big act. Mike reluctantly agrees to use Buttons during his magic acts before the PTA.
It's an episode of WandaVision, isn't it?
Literally, that is exactly what I thought when I read that. Somebody... Yeah. Tennis anyone? What do you think tennis anyone's about?
Is it about tennis?
Buttons helps Mike cure a small case of bigotry at a local country club.
What?
I assume they did no chimp policy. I don't know. I don't need to see and never need to see these things.
Okay.
The paint job. The Reynolds are chosen by a paint manufacturer as the ideal family to demonstrate their product on television. But...
But?
Buttons ends up causing chaos. Now, in hindsight... Is the ideal family to demonstrate anything on television? One with a chimp.
One with the chimp is a problem, yeah.
Yeah, apparently so. And Liz's allergy, whilst Mike is out of town at a dentist's convention.
Uh-huh, yep.
Liz develops an allergy that appears to be connected to the presence of buttons. There's some of the episodes there of me and the chimp, probably out on Blu-ray now. And I won't mention that because a lot of the rest of the information for this day, it's not very fun. For example, 1974, India becomes the sixth nation to explode an atomic bomb. And 1980, Ian Curtis hung himself.
You could just stop there.
It's 23. But it does bring to the fascinating fact that Loveville Tears Apart was number one in New Zealand.
Oh.
Yeah. Only got to 13 here, I believe. I looked into it, knocked off Sheena Easton's Morning Train and was usurped by Stars on 45,
oof,
which did 7 weeks at the top of the chart before being toppled by Joy Division with Atmosphere.
And by Atmosphere, I presume you mean a cover of the Russ Abbott classic.
Stop your heresy right now. So I thought I'd just have a look, see if anything else interesting got to the top of the charts in New Zealand. And yes, for example, Hogsnort Rupert's original Flagon Band.
That's certainly some words.
Pretty Girl, 4 weeks, 1970. The Royal Scots Dragoon Guards with Amazing Grace for 3 weeks in 1972.
Mm-hmm.
David Bowie with Cat People putting out fire, which 3 weeks at number one in 1982, and it only got to 26 here.
Right.
It's like, it's not a number one hit. Stretch. Foster and Allen with Maggie for 4 weeks in 1984.
No. Absolutely not.
The year of the Ghostbusters and the Gremlins and all the computer technology. Foster Allen with number one for a month. Moving a bit more forward, Last Ketchup's Ketchup Song was number one for 10 weeks in 2002.
They were riding high on Lord of the Rings fever at that point, weren't they? Still,
I assume they were just mad on ketchup and rings. Next title. And 15 weeks. In 2005, were taken up by a Crazy Frog.
Oh.
11 weeks for Axel F, 1 week for Popcorn, and 4 weeks for Jingle Bells / Last Christmas. Now, I'm like, I don't remember that happening. Apparently it was a hit here as well, not as big, obviously. So I thought I'd just have a quick look on the old Crazy Frog Wikipedia, as you do.
Crazy Frogopedia, yeah.
I feel we need to discuss the Last Christmas video. So this is direct from the wiki.
Right.
It starts with the Crazy Frog playing in the snow with the bounty hunter robot from previous clips, brackets, in some clips, Crazy Frog's genitals are censored.
Well, good.
The flashbacks end, i.e. reused animation.
Yep.
And the bounty hunter robot begins to throw a snowball at the frog.
Right.
But instead, he kisses the bounty hunter robot and his lips get stuck to him until the robot pulls him off.
Uh-huh.
They then make snow angels. And a message reads, "Have a ding-dong Christmas, everyone."
How's your life going, Ben?
I mean, I had enough time to read that, so yeah. You know, yeah. Looking forward to pubs being open again. Don't Let's Chat was researched and presented by Phil Catterall and Ben Baker. Production was by Ben, and the theme music was by Paul Abbott. Want to support future episodes and get exclusive bonus shows not on the regular feed? Join patreon.com/dotletschat. And follow us on Twitter @dotletschat. And now, as ever, we close with our resident robot's topical take on the news.
Bleep bloop! Three bottles of VK watermelon for a fiver.
Are you just reading things that you can see now?
I've got nanobots. Buy Microsoft product.
Why have they vaccinated a robot? It's a waste. Stupid. You don't think these things through, Phil.